The podcasts of the WDWNT Network are made possible each and every week by listeners like you and the following fantastic sponsors. Magical Travel is an authorized Disney vacation planner and is always ready to assist you in making your next trip to the Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, or aboard the Disney Cruise Line even more magical. If you book a trip on the Disney Cruise Line for most dates sailing between March 26th and May 14th, 2009, you can get 50% off the normal fare for children ages 12 and under. For more information on this special offer and many, many more, visit MagicalTravel.com and book your next Disney trip today.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-hey.
There's no turning back now.
Like a grand and miraculous spaceship, our planet has sailed through the universe of time.
Put up 2, 5, and 7.
You're just young!
Look at the guy in the goofy mask.
That's not a mask.
Sorry, lady.
I'm sure to do better next time. It was my first flight, and I'm still getting used to my programming.
You made it! I knew you would.
Hi, hello, and welcome. Welcome to our show.
Welcome to the WDW News Today podcast, a variety show celebrating the Walt Disney World Resort and its fans. At this time, please welcome your party host, Tom Corliss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another celebration of the WDWNT podcast. This is episode number 86 for March 22nd, 2009. To kick off this week's show, we have another great Walt Disney World-based discussion that you voted for. In this week's opinionated roundtable, we'll be picking out some of our favorite hidden gems of the Walt Disney World Resort. While the discussion is a little short in length, we hope it provides you with a few different things to look for during your next trip to the world. Following that is yet another edition of Town Square Talk to fill you in on everything going on around the WDWNT network of Disney-inspired websites and podcasts. In this week's trip down Main Street WDWNT, I'll have the details on how you could be more interactive with this show and the entire WDWNT network through Twitter, Facebook, and our new live programs, among a number of other topics. Finally, to wrap up the program, we'll continue our countdown of the 20 biggest moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios history, as voted by you, with a look at what took the number 8 and 9 spots on the list and how important these events are in our opinions. So what are you waiting for? Let's celebrate another week of Walt Disney World information and fun on the WDW News Today podcast.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's WDW News Today roundtable discussion that you voted for.
now time for another discussion that you voted for on the WDW News Today community forums, and the winning topic is our favorite hidden gems of the Walt Disney World Resort. Joining me for this discussion, Justin the Mayor Heyman.
How's it going?
WDWNT Hall of Famer, the Muppet Guy Steve Swanson.
Hey, hey.
And our newest employee, Mr. Scott Smith.
Hi, everyone.
All right, so basically, favorite hidden gems, basically what you think is a hidden or somewhat secret, maybe unknown item or whatever at Walt Disney World. So I guess since Scott is new here, we'll let Scott start. Scott, what are your favorite hidden gems?
All right, well, I got a couple here, so just cut me off whenever I get too long-winded here. One hidden gem, and I think makes a really great keepsake, is all the customizable merchandise you can find at the various places all around Walt Disney World. Like, I know the lightsabers at the Tatooine Traders, and then the potato heads all basically everywhere at a bunch of different resorts. I think they make such a great keepsake, and they're all pretty reasonably priced, that I really think it's something that everyone should do at least once to commemorate a trip or so. What's another hidden gem?
Well, I just want to touch on one thing there. Of course, now there's the Design-A-Tea store
right,
at Downtown Disney, so that's even another option in that direction.
Let's see, another one. And again, this isn't really hidden, but I think it's something kind of in the back, kind of out of the way, and it's the Mitsukoshi, the store in the Japan Pavilion, which I love because, A, it's a huge store that just has so much merchandise right from Japan. You get the mainstream stuff, like the anime stuff, like the plushies. You get stuff from America that's Japanese-influenced. And then, of course, you get the really, you know, cultural things. It's like the fans, you can write your name on it. They have the clam pool, I guess you'd call it, where you can get your own pearl, that's a really unique thing. And then you can even try on clothing, like they have the sandals and the kimonos, and they even have, and this is something I like to do every time I go there, is they even like have a toy museum that's sort of kind of in between the more modern stuff and the older stuff, and they got lots of really old stuff and stuff that's video game and stuff from all different walks of culture in Japan, and that's just a great place to go.
That's the Tin Toy Stories exhibit, which actually has the nice little intro video from, who is that? From Pixar. Why is the name escaping me at the moment?
John Lasseter.
There you go. I don't know why I blanked out there.
And then right outside is this beautiful koi pool with the deer scare, and just like, just a great peaceful place, you know, because we all know Walt Disney World can get a little hectic sometimes. So it's just great to, you know, unwind there. And let me do one more. I really like the trails in Animal Kingdom. Those, I think, especially some of them are actually hidden, so it's hard to get to. I remember one time I was at Animal Kingdom, and I just sort of wandered into, Discovery Island Trail that just loops behind it. Like, I guess the back would be the opposite side of, like, that bridge that brings you right into the opening area. And it was so quiet and so peaceful, and there are actual animal exhibits there to look at, too. It's just a great way to, you know, cool off, get away from the crowd, just unwind. And I think the Cretaceous Trail in Dinoland falls into that category too, although they should do a little more with that. It's a little lacking in things to look at.
It's a little empty, yeah.
Yeah, but it, like, again, for just a nice way to cool off, enjoy the scenery, enjoy the theming Disney does. Those are some of my picks.
Excellent. Next up, Steve Swanson.
Sure, well, I think one of my favorites is over in Hollywood Studios at Rock and Roller Coaster. And it's actually two different objects that kind of tie in together. They're not so much hidden, but you can easily overlook them. And for me, they're very meaningful. This would be the first element is in the single rider line when you go in there. I believe the Fast Pass rider line as well, they go in the same place. You go into what's called the artist entrance to G-Force Records, and it's just a circular room that you go into, and there are four columns coming down from the ceiling, and they're four essentially giant guitar necks. And you look up at the top, and they have the guitar head and the tuning pegs even, which I thought was a really cool, nice touch. Just, you know, some extra detail there. And they're very just nice wood paneled. They've got the frets going down. There's no strings on them per se, but they're very large decorated guitar necks. And unfortunately, they have all the posters of the Disney Channel quote unquote singers in there too. But you walk through there and you get into the movie room, we'll call it, where you get to see the movie of Aerosmith finishing up at the studio for the day and the manager harassing them and getting them across town to get to their show. And in the room itself is there are a lot of musical instruments, and in that room you see a true to style Joe Perry Gibson Les Paul, which I believe is just a studio black model, which was one of the ones that I've seen him playing in different videos or whatever at least. So those two objects kind of go together. And I believe the four guitar neck pillars are actually done in a Gibson style, and guitar players might know what I mean. There's the guitar head looks like the same kind of Gibson guitar head. So that's something that's at least kind of overlooked that I think is pretty cool.
Justin Heyman.
I have kind of very good reason for, and if you haven't heard on some of the previous discussions, I have two young kids. So my hidden gem, or my biggest hidden gem, I should say, is the back path from Toontown to Tomorrowland in the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, you stole it.
Dad got it from me. I kind of was surprised it lasted this long. And for those of you who don't know, it kind of leaves Toontown over by the train station and ends up on the side of the arcade that is the exit of Space Mountain. So for me, this path is great because my kids can sit in their strollers and fall asleep. There's not a lot of people around. It's also a quick way, if you do need to get from Tomorrowland to Toontown, there's hardly any people on there. And the only noise that you really have back there is the sound of the train passing by periodically. So it's a great little path. I think the only time it's heavily used is really not-so-scary parties that I really know of anything that goes on back there.
Yeah, they put out the Alice in Wonderland theming with the deck of cards and such.
So that's one. The other one is kind of a piece of transportation that I never took before, and it's not really hidden, but it's just, I think, not used as much. This is the small boat that goes between the Magic Kingdom, the Grand Floridian, and the Polynesian. I don't even know the name of it. Tom, do you know if it has a name?
They're just called resort launches.
Yeah.
That's all.
But I hardly ever see anybody on them, but it does take kind of a quick way around without having to sit through the monorail loop if you're in a hurry to get over to the Polynesian or the Grand Floridian. So,
and it stops at the Grand Floridian first, which if you're staying there, it really is a very quick way.
Yeah, we were actually probably wouldn't have made a dinner reservation if it wasn't for that launch. So so that was kind of a new find for me. And I think that'll do it for me.
All right. I think I easily outnumber everyone on these. I have a nice list. I've separated these into two categories. The first are really hidden, hidden experiences more than, I'll talk about the later ones later. But first of all, Justin already mentioned the walkway from Toontown Fair to Tomorrowland, so I won't talk about that. Next piece is a fantastic piece of theming over at Hollywood Studios. Sort of at the top of Sunset Boulevard, where it connects with Hollywood Boulevard, there's this, sort of behind a tree, there's this billboard of the Hollywood Tower Hotel sign. This is one of the best pieces of theming because, again, it ties in very well to the Tower of Terror storyline. The billboard appears to be from the era where the hotel was still very popular. It's a bit beaten up at the moment, obviously, years after certain events happened in the Hollywood Tower Hotel. But again, it's so far away from the Tower of Terror. It's not all that close, and yet it's a piece of theming that tells the story of that attraction from very far away, and you don't see that a whole lot anywhere at Walt Disney World. Just one of the greater pieces, and it's really hidden. It's not that easy to see, so that's one thing. The other thing that's always fun is the rope by the Indiana Jones Epic Stunt Spectacular that you can pull, and it, of course the guy falls into the hole, and that's always a lot of fun to scare people.
Yeah.
Next one, I have the second entrance to Animal Kingdom. which is actually through the Rainforest Cafe. This is usually the only entrance I use to Animal Kingdom. For some reason, Animal Kingdom's main entrance backs up quite a bit. So, that's it for those. The last four I have are tributes to past attractions, which, as many of you know, are hidden throughout many Walt Disney World attractions, current attractions. First of all, at the Magic Kingdom, inside Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin, there are these batteries on the back wall of the queue area. And if you look at the batteries, they are double D batteries. Does anyone know what the double D on the batteries stands for?
Delta Dream Flight?
There you go. And of course, everyone knows my strange fascination with Delta Dream Flight. So I always thought that was a really cool nod to that attraction. Next up is the also in the Magic Kingdom, the Enchanted Tiki Room under new management. This entire show is full of references to the original show. Matter of fact, the beginning of the show is pretty much identical to the original show. I love the remix version of the original song that it's sort of woven into the end there. I think my favorite line, though, is, "I wonder what happened to Rosita." And this is actually an original line from the original show as well. And yet again, here it is in the new version. Don't know why, but always enjoyed that. After that, at Epcot, the Horizons references inside Mission Space. Of course, there's that gravity wheel in the queue area that actually has the Horizons logo right in the middle of it, the old Horizons Pavilion logo. And again, that logo can be found in the store area right on the register, the cash register. So take a look next time you're in there. And of course, my final one is still in Epcot. It is in the Journey into Imagination with Figment attraction. There's a door in the quote-unquote Imagination Institute labeled Dean Finder, and that is a tribute to a former character of the pavilion, the Dream Finder. And as many of you know, my favorite attraction of all time, the original Journey into Imagination, so that has always been one of my favorite nods as well. So with that, I think that's going to wrap up our favorite hidden gems of the Walt Disney World Resort.
It's time to see what's going on around the WDWNT family of websites and make some town square talk. To fill you in on all of this week's announcements, please welcome Mayor Justin Heyman.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Town Square Talk. I am not the Mayor Justin Heyman. I am the host of the WDW News Today podcast, Tom Corliss. Since all the topics for this week's Town Square Talk really are in my department, I figured why not give everyone the week off, and I think I could handle this just myself. And a very special hello, as always, to our listeners on the Disneyland News Today podcast. So I have five little topics to talk about on this week's Town Square Talk regarding the entire WDWNT network, so let's get right into it. First of all, one of the big revolutions WDWNT has always been at the forefront of has been Twitter. And it's something we've been using on the WDW News Today site for a very, very long time now. Almost as long as we've had the site, just about. What Twitter is, for those of you who may not know, it's pretty much a status update. And you could do it quite regularly. And those of you familiar with Facebook probably know what a status update is. If not, basically, you could tell people what you're doing. And yes, so people do want to do that, and it often is quite fun. With the WDW News Today Twitter, which is my personal account, as well as our account here at WDWNT, which you can find at twitter.com/WDWNT, frequently updated with the news updates that get put on WDWNewsToday.com. I frequently update it with news about the week's podcast before it comes out. And just a lot of other special little tidbits along the way, some personal stuff, some other fun stuff as well. So that's always a lot of fun with that account. Also, it gives us a great opportunity to provide a lot of information through a different avenue. So really, we can announce our live shows through there. We could tell you we're testing something. We'd like you to come look at it, which is what we did with the new WDWNTube video site. When that was in testing, rather than put it up on the main page, we decided to let our Twitter followers and Facebook followers get the first run there, as it was a great way to contact them and tell them, we're testing this, we'd like you to come play around with it, come right in. So, Twitter has been a great tool for us personally. Those of you who are interested in the Disneyland News Today site, there is now a account just for Disneyland News Today, which Luke Manning runs, and you could get a link to that. I don't have the exact link in front of me, but if you go to DisneylandNewsToday.com, in the sidebar, you'll see our Follow Us on Twitter logo, which is the Orange Bird, famous icon of the Walt Disney World Resort from the 1970s, and he'll be standing next to a little sign that says Follow DLNT on Twitter. Just click him, you'll go right to the page, and all you gotta click is Follow if you already have Twitter. If you're not signed up for Twitter, it really is a very useful tool, and it's free to use, and it's really fun to use as well. So I suggest you sign up for that. As well as, for those of you interested in our video site, our Disney Park video site, the WDWNTube, there is also a Twitter account for that as well. And again, you can get the link to that at WDWNTUBE.com, and you'll see the orange bird there once again telling you to follow us on Twitter. So Twitter has really been a fantastic tool, but almost as fantastic a tool, if not as much, has been Facebook for us. And it's really been just a great place for us to put information and to congregate with our fans. Really something we hoped our forums would be, but it's really become more relevant on Facebook all of a sudden. And some great things we've done with Facebook is we've converted what was simply the WDW News Today group on Facebook into the WDWNT network group on Facebook, so we could bring together our entire network of fans, those of you who listen to the podcasts, whichever ones they may be, those of you who visit the websites, the video site, the forums, whatever it is, bring you all together in one place. That way we could give you the updates you need on certain events and such we're working on. And you could join that group, again, in the sidebar of DisneylandNewsToday.com or WDWNewsToday.com. There is a link to our Facebook group. I can't read the URL because it's some ridiculous thing that I'll probably botch here, and then you'll go to the wrong place. But if not, it'll be in the WDW News Today show notes for this week as well, the link, as it is every week. But the Facebook group, really a great tool for us. We've been telling people about our meets there, our upcoming fan meets at Walt Disney World. And yes, those of you who visit Disneyland News Today will be happy to know we're doing a Disneyland meet on August 1st and 2nd. No details just yet. But we are actively working on that as well. So really going to be a great place to RSVP for those events and get information for those kind of events, as well as for the live shows again. And it's also a great place to congregate with other WDWNT followers. So really a lot of fun stuff going on there. A great way to get updates right there with our Facebook group. No matter what part of the WDWNT network you're interested in, a fantastic tool. So if you don't have Facebook, again, it's something I suggest you sign up for. I know I was someone who was really adverse to Facebook before seeing what we could do for the network there. And I don't use Facebook for personal reasons. I use it for, again, the network. And again, it's been fantastic. It's been a great way to interact with all of you. And that's what we really strive for here, is we want you to be more involved. This is, as we said from day one with this entire network, this is yours. And everything we do is for you. So the more you interact, the more things will change to all of your preferences, and the more you have a say in everything we do here. So Facebook is a great way to get more involved and begin to shape the face of the WDWNT network as a whole. Next up on the list, I have WDWNT Live, which a few of you know we have been testing all week long this week. And we've been inviting you through Twitter and Facebook to join us for those test runs. Some have been more successful than others, but I think we're just about ready. Again, recording this going into our big live show Sunday evening, March 22nd, which may be passed by the time this show comes out. I'm not sure. But really getting excited to give it a full run now that we're going to use Ustream. And we're actually going to host the live shows right on our website. So that's going to be WDWNewsToday.com /WDWNT-live. That's WDWNT-LIVE. And that'll take you right there. If not, if you can't have problems getting to it, just go to WDWNewsToday.com, and right in the top navigation bar, you'll see WDWNT Live. Just click it. It'll take you right there. So not only is this going to be a place where we're going to host our very big live shows that encompass the entire network, it's also a place where from time to time, if we're just fooling around, we don't have much to do, and we feel like this would be some great time to interact with you, we'll hop on there. I know I've hopped on there a few times. I was a little, had a little gap in work, and it was great to talk to many of you. I know we were watching some attraction videos just on Saturday night, and we decided why not play them on the Ustream. That way we could watch them along with some of you. So it's really fun, the fact that now things we always wanted to do and share some of those downtime moments and just have a little fun with all of you away from the more structured shows and websites and, you know, the more structured things we do, to really have an outlet where we could just be, you know, without a script, sit there and have fun with you. That really has been a great highlight of this week for me. The few times I've hopped on the live and a few of you have shown up and we've had a lot of fun. So again, with the Twitter and Facebook, they are going to be a great way to find out when we're flipping on the switch for WDWNT Live. If you want to know when someone's on the air on WDWNT Live, that is the way to find out. So the main site may not be the best way, and it's a whole lot easier than coming to the site and clicking WDWNT Live and seeing if anything's going on there. So really the best thing to do here is to follow me on Twitter, follow Luke and Disneyland News Today on Twitter, and or, of course, make me a friend on Facebook, or join the NT group on Facebook, the WDWNT Network group. This is how to find out about all these live shows, these fan meets and such that we're planning. It's really the best way to get an inside look at what the WDWNT Network is working on. And as a matter of fact, over the next few months to come, WDWNT is working on our biggest project to date. A really exciting project that is meant to be fully interactive with all of you. Really revolutionary concept as well. And I'll be dropping hints to that project through Twitter and Facebook over the weeks to come. And really excited about that project. But again, sadly, I can't say much about it just yet. Because again, not all the details are set in stone, but we're working on it. So that's everything having to do with our really interactive component of our network. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, join us for the live shows, whether it be the structured live shows once a month on Sunday, or the non-structured shows where we just come on for a little fun, you know, it could be any time. So always a lot of fun. Make sure you join us on Twitter, Facebook, and for WDWNT Live. We really look forward to seeing you there. The next piece of news is more for our WDW News Today audience, but it's about new staff members. And you probably started noticing this week with the debut of Mr. Scott Smith, our latest employee for the WDWNT podcast. But we're bringing in sort of a renaissance movement here of new staff members. WDW News Today staff has been not shrinking, but the podcast staff has been shrinking as many of our staff members have personal commitments and such. And of course, things change in everyone's lives. So with the advent that Jason Diffendahl would walk away for a while to take care of some personal things, we're going to take this opportunity to grow and expand with some new staff members, bring a new feel to the show, bring some new perspectives to the show. Really exciting. So Scott Smith debuted this week. I believe we're going to debut one or two new staff members next week, give them a trial run. And if all goes well, you'll see them permanently here at WDWNT. So if it feels a little messy on the News Today podcast where there's people all over in different segments, it's really because we're trying to get a feel of who's going to join us here permanently and what segments they're going to be a part of regularly. And it's the same way we pretty much figured it out in the first place, who was in what segments we're going to do for our new staff members. So if things seem a little discombobulated the next few weeks, I apologize, but we're really just trying to get things in shape so we can provide you with the very best product possible, as always. So again, thank you for your understanding, and again, I personally look forward to these new staff members and seeing what they can contribute to our fantastic show every week. And finally, one of our more usual updates I can now talk about is WDWNT Interactive, the interactive component of the WDW News Today podcast, where we pretty much give you control of the segments. Again, I've said it already, fan interaction is the biggest component of WDW News Today. While some other sites will tell you that that's what they're all about, I don't think any of them can give you what we do. You could follow us on Twitter. You could congregate with us and fellow listeners and viewers and such on Facebook. We have the live shows. And of course, NT Interactive, we're the only Disney fan podcast that lets you actually choose the segments. So, and of course, you could do that on the WDW News Today community forums, which is wdwnewstoday.com/forums, F-O-R-U-M-S. Go down to the WDWNT Interactive section, and you could vote for the following segments. First of all, Back to the Future returns on our monumental episode number 100. May seem like a while away, but for us, the planning needs to begin because it's really not that far off. It's coming up at the end of June. And the topics up for voting, there's quite a few of them, are either Pirates of the Caribbean at the Magic Kingdom, the Tropical Serenade, or Enchanted Tiki Room under new management at the Magic Kingdom as well. Journey into Imagination, Journey into Your Imagination, and Journey into Imagination with Figment at Epcot, Horizons and Mission Space at Epcot, The Great Movie Ride at Disney's Hollywood Studios, Parades at Disney's Hollywood Studios, Countdown to Extinction or Dinosaur at Animal Kingdom, and the Disney Village / Downtown Disney. These are the eight topics up for voting for our Walt Disney World History segment when it returns. Currently in the lead is my personal favorite, Journey into Imagination, the three incarnations of that attraction. But it's still anyone's game. Just 24 votes in thus far. I know many of you love our Back to the Future segment. I know it's my personal favorite, and in a lot of ways I feel it's the segment that got us where we are today. So, really excited about the return of that. It's gotten a nice vacation from episode 76 to then. We're going to bring it back refreshed, renewed, and with one of these topics in a very big way. These are all some very huge pieces of Walt Disney World history that we have still not covered, and we need to. And what a great way to bring it back with one of those. And again, the one we bring it back with is completely in your hands, as always. Also up for voting at this moment is What Were They Thinking for episode 88, one of our newer segments and quickly become one of the more popular. The four topics up for voting there are Everywhere I See DVC, or Disney Vacation Club, so the growth of the Disney Vacation Club over the last decade. Next is the Living Character Initiative Initiates, which would be, of course, the bringing of the Living Character Initiative into multiple facets of the Walt Disney World Resort. Next topic is Camp Full of Mice over Mystical Creatures, which of course would be the choice to add Camp Minnie Mickey to Animal Kingdom rather than the proposed Beastly Kingdom. And finally, the topic everyone loves to discuss, to expand or not to expand, the monorail story. Should the Walt Disney World monorail system expand further? Why has it not? We'll answer all that if that wins the voting on What Were They Thinking for episode number 88. And again, as always, completely in your hands. And that's what we have for your voting pleasure right now on WDWNT Interactive. So with that, I think that just about wraps it up here for Town Square Talk. I hope I haven't rambled on too much. Again, I felt these were five topics I really needed to sink into. I don't think we had anything else that is happening in our other departments at the moment where we could have some of our other great staff members in here. But again, I'd like to thank you for your time, and I look forward to seeing you on Twitter and Facebook at our live shows, and you further interacting with us here at the WDWNT Network. Now, I am going to take a ride on the trolley.
In honor of the historic 20th anniversary of Disney's Hollywood Studios at the Walt Disney World Resort, the WDW News Today podcast proudly presents its greatest production to date, the 20 biggest moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios history, as voted by you. Please welcome your host for this spectacular journey into the movies, director Tom Corliss. Hollywood, here we come!
Lights, camera, action. It's time now to continue our countdown of the 20 biggest moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios history, as voted by you. And as in past weeks, we're going to count down the list according to you, and we're going to state how important these events are in our opinions in the 20-year history of the park. Joining me for the segment this week, the mayor, Justin Heyman.
How's it going?
Making his triumphant return to the show, the host of the very popular Muppet Cast, Mr. Steve Swanson.
Justin's the mayor. Can I be the treasurer?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
We awesome. Have no funds anyway, so
okay.
It shouldn't be a hard job.
Perfect.
We have our newest employee, Mr. Scott Smith.
Can I be Department of Sanitation?
Sure, but you have to get rid of Luke Manning then.
Oh, man. Tough job.
And speaking of it, Luke Manning is joining us as well.
Social worker Luke Manning here.
Yes. Well, you're going to need some social working after this is all through. All right, anyway, we're going to count down to moment number 9 at this point. Actually, we're going to do 2 moments this evening, but I'll need that drum roll so we can announce moment number 9. I don't even want to know what just occurred. Anyway, moment number 9 is Jim Henson's Muppet Vision 3D debuts May 16th, 1991. So since he is here, he is the host of the Muppet Cast, Steve Swanson. What is the importance of Jim Henson's Muppet Vision 3D in the history of the Hollywood studios?
Well, in the history of the studios, I mean, it's pretty significant. I think let's start, though, with the date that it opened, May 16th, 1991. That's actually 1 year to the day after Jim Henson actually passed away, unfortunately. So very significant date there. It's the last thing that he conceivably performed in, certainly the last thing that he directed. So it's kind of like some of those Walt Disney World attractions where it's, you know, the last thing that Walt saw or approved or worked on or designed, those kinds of things. This is sort of that, that's that in the Muppet world and Jim Henson's world. As far as what it adds to the park, I think it just adds a perfect little kind of silly, zany touch to all the sort of the spectacular design and the fun that and the unique experience that Disney's Hollywood Studios offers. And you've got things that pay tribute to like old Hollywood, like the Great Movie Ride, things that are high tech thrill adventures like Indiana Jones and Star Tours, and then you've got this sort of, you know, kind of just offbeat, humorous, wacky kind of pavilion, not a pavilion, but a little area, you know, with it's all, it plays, you walk through it, it plays Muppet music. It has a very different feel to it. It has an immediately a different look to it as well. And maybe the look couldn't necessarily be considered Muppet type architecture because it's very plain looking architecture. But I think just the overall theming of the area with the Muppet music and the artwork of the Muppet vendors, and you've got the Kermit balloon and the Muppet store, and it's just a very unique kind of break in the scenery, and it just kind of throws something new at you immediately when you walk into it. And of course, that's exactly what the Muppets do. They're well known for throwing things, especially at each other.
Banana cream pie.
Exactly. Boomerang fish.
Remote control banana cream pie.
I throw my fish and they come back to me.
Was that Stitch?
It's Stitch Zealand. That's who it is.
Lou Zealand, thank you. I was blanking on his name.
Oh, my Lord. Alrighty, Justin Heyman, where is this on your list and why?
I actually had this right at number 9. So I agree with everybody. This was one of those things where, you know, the company, and there were some other things around this time that started to get the company into this, but where the company was saying, here's an attraction that It's not in a soundstage. It's not the Backlot Tour. It's not a stunt show, you know, in a park that was really just starting to open up. So, you know, the addition of Muppet Vision and to some extent at the time, Here Come the Muppets, really kind of opened up the park's perspective, much like kind of what Steve was saying. It gave the park a new dimension on what the movies were. And I guess in some respects, you could even stretch it to say, started to allow the park to move in the direction that it's ending up in now, which is more to celebrate movies and to, you know, celebrate production instead of making you feel like you're in a studio theme park, which
well, they
we
were
keep
thinking
coming
about
back to,
what
but...
were they celebrating earlier. They really find that
also to build
out
on what Justin had said, something else that I had forgotten to mention. Here Come the Muppets and Muppet Vision 3D. These were things that obviously Jim Henson was working very closely with the Disney folks and with Michael Eisner to develop in the parks. And actually, there were plans. I don't know if they were drawn up with Disney, but Henson himself drew up plans for a Muppet version of a theme park. So maybe he was also thinking that these were sort of precursors to a Muppet Land within Disney, at that point, Disney's MGM studios, which is an exciting prospect in itself.
Yeah, and of course we all know that there was talk at some points of doing an attraction called the Great Muppet Movie Ride.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And the Gonzo's Pizzeria, or the pizza restaurant based on Gonzo and Rizzo. Mm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Scott Smith, where is this on your list and why?
I placed this really high. Well, relatively high. I placed that number 4, actually, which is because to me, not only is this one of my favorite attractions, but it represents so much. Because first of all, like people have mentioned, for the studios itself, not only did it add another franchise to the studios, because, you know, MGM back then and Hollywood was a place where other things went that, you know, Disney worked out deals with. And it just added a funny... Because the show is brilliant. The show is written brilliantly, and it's really funny. And it added a level of humor to MGM Studios that I don't want to say was not there at all, but this was funny, and this was creative, and it was imaginative. And so you mentioned, like, sort of the architecture being somewhat bland. Well, I remember thinking as a kid is that it's true, the architecture of the building itself and everything is sort of bland, but then there's hints all over the place of, like, they started painting and then they gave up and then they just scribbled on the walls. It really looked like the Muppets moved in. These characters were alive and literally moved into space. So it was such a great theming that it really just, in my opinion, rose the bar on, like, what you could do with theming. Because they took something that was kind of boring and made it, you know, hilarious with hidden gems all over the stuff. Not to mention, and also, the show itself really changed what a 3D movie could be. Because before this in Disney World, you had Magic Journeys and Captain EO, the first two 3D shows, and they were sort of straight movies. This had so many other layers to it that as soon as you walked, like I said, walked in the area, the show started. You saw the Muppets' chaos. You saw them leave their mark on the area. And then you go in, and you're in their world. You see the props from their movies. You see, you know, evidence that they're there, notes to other people. And the pre-show is just, again, one of the best pre-shows in Walt Disney World, period. And then when you sit down, not only are you watching a funny 3D movie, but there's audio animatronics. You know, which the Muppets work great with audio animatronics. There's the penguins, you got Statler and Waldorf. You know, the scenery changes. Like, after the cannon goes off, the theater itself becomes a part of the movie. And then, of course, when I first saw the Muppet, I couldn't believe when Sweetums actually came out and had another level of this. So it really, in my opinion, elevated a 3D movie to a 3D attraction. And really has set the bar for everything that came after it, because you can't just watch a movie and have things pop out at you anymore. After this attraction, they worked brilliantly to figure out how the audience, are involved with what we're watching. And it's, yeah, like, it's not just a movie anymore. You know, you can't really get away with that anymore. Because especially, yeah, not so, I had it really high because for not only what it did to the studios, but also what it did to that type of attraction in general.
Yeah, and Scott, you made an excellent point that really this area looks as if it existed before Muppet Vision was ever there, and then the Muppets moved into the area. And that's really a sense of theming that we don't often get with many attractions or areas at Walt Disney World. So that was really, really well done, where you could make an area look like it existed prior, and then yet it was all built at the same time. So really
cool.
This is
the studios, you know, kind of crossing the bridge, like Justin said, between a working studios and a theme park. Well, this is supposed to be, the story is that this is a working studios and they let the Muppets have some room. So they moved in and put their stamp on it.
Luke Manning, where is this on your list and why?
I have this list very close to what the listeners have it at. I have it at number 8. Now, in my opinion, Muppets, I think, is to Hollywood Studios as, say, for example, the Country Bear Jamboree or Carousel of Progress is to the Magic Kingdom or the American Adventure is to Epcot. It's a signature show for the park. And it really is, as Scott said, a step above past 3D movies that were done before that, even though they were, the two previous shows were pretty good. That this just really, it brought the 3D movie idea into what is often called the 4D movie, which not only throws in 3D effects, but also brings in animatronics and just various other features. I mean, even like you said, the walk around Sweetums. So,
Sweetums?
Yeah. So it's. I think it's a really good attraction, and I don't think it will ever go anywhere because it's not dated. It's just a classic piece of Muppets, and I think it's the Muppets at their best.
Absolutely. Personally, I can't believe this, but I'm going to have to agree with Luke Manning. I have this up at number 8. And so many points to touch on here, and I think the first is, everyone has said it, this was the first 4D show. And shows like Mickey's Filler Magic would be probably non-existent without the creation of this. And the other thing this is a testament to is the unbelievable creative minds at Disney and the unbelievably creative mind of Jim Henson himself. This is the two leaders in family entertainment coming together for what is, and Steve may argue with me on this, Jim Henson's finest work and his most timeless piece. This attraction forever proves that the Muppets are a timeless franchise. It doesn't matter what year you were born, how old you are, or whatever. You go and see the show, you're going to be entertained. And another niche this has filled for this park since day one is the completely family-friendly attraction, which we really have not seen in as grand a scale until Toy Story Mania last year. This was the first attraction that the entire family could really be involved in. Again, Star Tours, a motion simulator, not everyone could do that. Indiana Jones may be frightening for children. The same could be said for some scenes of the Great Movie Ride.
Right.
And a lot of the other shows would bore children, to be honest. Superstar Television, and again, scaring the children with the Monster Sound Show. So this was the first real family-friendly offering. This was bringing in one of the premier entertainment franchises out there. When you think of entertainment, you think of George Lucas, you think of Disney, and you think of Jim Henson and the Muppets. This was just such a natural fit. This entire area was so well themed. Again, two genius organizations at work here, and really a fantastic show that really changed the fortunes of this park at the time. It was a half-day park, again, adding another layer in 1991 to that, and again, a 3D show. So, an excellent attraction.
I'd absolutely agree with you that, you know, it's material and it's some of the best Muppet material out there, and really the best Muppet material that exists is that which that works for multiple age levels. When you think of things like the Muppet Show, certainly, you know, it's humor, but it's not just humor, but it's material that it's writing and acting and characterization that work for multiple members of the family. And same with the humor and the jokes and the songs and everything. I mean, it's written in such a way, and
it a lot of it is Jerry Jewell's script writing and some of the songwriting in there. It's just done in such a genius and classic Muppet style that, it's something that everyone can always repeatedly enjoy.
And they took so many conventions and just turned them on its ear, which is what the Muppets do best, just playing with the theme park format, playing with Disney itself. Yeah. You know, like, we all know we're in a Disney park, so do the Muppets. Let's play with that. It's just, it's such a shame because, like, it was clear that they had so much fun playing with the theme park. What could we do in a theme park that if they would have been able to do, like, a restaurant, a dark ride, it would have been brilliant.
Sure.
It would have absolutely been brilliant.
And Henson was becoming very invested in Florida by the end of his life. He had moved down to Orlando. He had bought a house down there. He was ready to go. He had a lot of exciting things planned, but unfortunately, that it didn't go that way.
Well, thankfully, he got to see Muppet Vision through, and I think that definitely shows that he put a lot of time and effort into this show. And what's funny is the reoccurring theme of this entire segment is changing attractions, I think. And the studios has always had that problem where more so, maybe even than Epcot, things age at the studios. Yet Muppet Vision seems to be the only attraction that is held up. Even the timeless story of Star Wars, many guests complain it feels dated. The Great Movie Ride is considered dated as well, as there's always a continuous stream of what could be considered great American films. But The Muppet Show is the single attraction, more so than any other, at least it's been there the longest, that, you know, has stood the test of time, and for the foreseeable future, it's hard to believe anything will ever replace it.
I think some of that, too, Tom, is because of what we were just mentioning, that it being the first, you know, quote-unquote 4D film, its technology and show innovations were kind of ahead of everything else. So while Store Tours, you know, was a good motion simulator ride, that motion sim technology now is outdated itself.
Yeah.
While Star Wars clearly isn't, with the addition of Jedi Training Academy, Star Wars Weekend still go on. Clearly that franchise is not dead. I think what we see is that folks are saying, I'm tired of riding the same old motion simulators that, you know, have been here since the ride opened. So I think that is, you know, in addition to the timeless nature of the Muppets, it was a good fit for the technology to the subjects.
And the technology is brilliantly simple, because it's kind of like the whole Haunted Mansion thing. Like, those effects are hundreds of years old, yet they're still brilliant, you know? The show was just put together fantastically.
I mean, if you look at the effect where Waldo is pumped up and explodes and starts his own football team, they're just these very simple lighting effects on the walls, but it creates the illusion that there are hundreds of Waldos running around the theater. It is, again, a very, very simple effect, but it still does the job all these years later.
Well, and on the subject of lighting effects, I mean, the minute you walk into the movie theater, you're seeing lighting effects because the walls aren't blown up yet. When the walls are blown up, that's the absence of the lighting effect that makes that wall red. So, I mean, you're right. It's taking all these simple little tricks, these little visual and audio tricks and sensory tricks in some cases, and just making them, you know, seamless. And from the minute you walk in, you're essentially a part of the show. You're being tricked. And you're just right along with this ride, and for lack of a better word, and it's just, I don't know what it is, but it's as much fun every time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I just went in January and I still laughed. I still saw new things, like the penguins when they're up still move when they're not the center of attention. Those audio animatronics are still alive. When they're not the light, they're not being lit.
Same for Stadler and Waldorf, who are there the entire show.
It's remarkable. It's just remarkable.
It really is. And another thing is, as a child, I remember staring at those walls, trying to figure out how on earth, the next time I came back later in the day, that those walls would be somehow fixed from that massive explosion. Nowadays, I think I figured it out by now. But still, again, for a young audience, those visual effects still do the trick today, no matter how updated effects may be through time.
Yeah, and it even acknowledged the world outside. I remember thinking how cool that was when I was a kid, that when the fire truck crashes through at the end, you know, it just kept with the reality. We're still in the studios. You're still in the theme park. You just went into our world for a second. And it's a shame they took that away, because that's, you know, something that carried over in PhilharMagic, having, you know, Donald be through the wall like he was in the show when they used to have the fire truck there. But
yeah, man.
Although, I don't know if this is the same case in Walt Disney World, but I noticed this last time I saw Muppet Vision 3D. And during that fire truck scene, Sweetums is out, of course, in his live-action character role, saying, "Wow, what an explosion!" and all that stuff.
What an explosion! Yeah.
Well, I don't know if anyone else has ever noticed, but he's also in the movie at that same time.
I think I think that's Pluto. I think that's Pluto.
No, Sweetums is in it. I assure you, I'm not going crazy.
I'm pretty sure it's Pluto.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch that. Yeah,
I don't know. It doesn't seem like a Disney mistake.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty obvious mistake. I think it's Pluto, because I remember. I know Pluto's in there. I know Pluto's looking into the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
No,
I'm gonna have to go back and look at
Bunny
that.
Bunny ran away.
And you know what's something that really disappointed me last time I was there in February? I don't know who was playing him, but 2 days in a row, because yes, I went and saw it 2 days in a row, I got a bad Sweetums.
Oh no.
Oh man, I've never had a bad Sweetums.
This guy couldn't care less.
That's bad.
Kind of disappointing. And I mean, it didn't ruin the show, but it just kind of like, really? You just really? So it
was, you should have got up and shown him how it's done.
I should have. I thought about it.
And you know what? That's one of those things where it's very much like the Monsters, Inc. laugh floor, where because it's a live cast member that has to come out every single show and do that, it really is a different experience. You don't know, you know, who's going to be Sweetums this time.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of the few attractions in the earlier history where they had a cast member actually really involved in a more standard attraction.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that made all the difference, you know?
It really did.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it did. But wasn't that one of the things that when Walt was first designing attractions, that he thought about having human performers in there, but no, you're not going to get the exact same experience for each guest, you know, every time. And that is the risk you take, obviously, because I got a bad Sweetums. But but when it's a good character in there, it really adds another dimension to the show that couldn't be there without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that a live character is interacting with Bean Bunny up in the balcony, it's just such little things like that that are still amazing about this show.
Yeah, and the show is not just the screen.
No.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just the screen. It's the fact that there are animatronic Muppets there. One of the things that Henson liked to do when he was shooting things, he didn't like to use a lot of CG. If you watch a lot of his movies, they take a lot of painstaking time and effort to, you know, watch things like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. They make huge characters that are right there in the space. And the same kind of thing in Muppet Vision 3D. They have a real Statler and Waldorf there. Mm-hmm. They have a real Sweetums. They have an animatronic Bean Bunny. Having those characters there in the space puts yet another plane on that movie, on that experience.
And then you've got Waldo.
And then you've got Waldo, exactly. Which was a huge programming and a huge 3D effort for them, you know, back in the early 90s. I mean, that to do that today would be nothing. I mean, I could do that on my computer right here. It took them, you know, 2 days to render a few minutes worth of Waldo moving that fluidly.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing about this show is, depending on where you sit, there is so much to see in the entire theater around you that you would have to see the show multiple times from different seating areas.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
To really catch everything. I mean, the Swedish chef with the projector in the back, again, if you sit in the back to get a close look at him, then you may not see all of the stuff the penguins are up in the front. So
exactly.
Really, not just focusing on making sure everyone could see everything, but rather that there's something happening everywhere in the theater, no matter where you're sitting.
Exactly. Like in January, because I was there for the half marathon, I was able to sit in the front, and that's when I really got a good look at the penguins, where before I was not able to do that. And, you know, you're there with Sweetums. You know, he's close to you. It's so engrossing. It's really Disney at its best.
Absolutely.
And Jim Henson, of course.
All right. We're now going to move on to Studios moment number 8. So if I could have a slightly better drum roll this time, it would be appreciated. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was our special drummer, Jose Castillo. Thank you. All right, so Studios moment number 8 on the countdown is the 20th anniversary of Disney's Hollywood Studios, May 1st, 2009, hasn't happened yet. The way we're going to approach this one is we're going to see where it is on some of our lists and why it's such an important event. So again, we'll start off with Steve. Steve, why is the 20th anniversary of this park so important?
Well, first of all, because it's the third park. I mean, it was, you know, the original two were the Magic Kingdom and Epcot. And this, the addition of this park was such a momentous occasion to begin with. And then what it represented was something that, you know, the Magic Kingdom and Epcot really hadn't covered yet. And they did it in such a novel way with such unique offerings from what you could find in those other two parks that it was just such a thing of interest. I remember the very first time I went to Walt Disney World was maybe a year or two before this was completed. So you saw some of the construction, and of course you saw signs, and it was all the talk of everyone down there. But unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to go down there. A few years later, my father was on business in Florida and took a couple days and went down there without us, which was sort of like, okay, thanks, Dad. But he had all these great stories to tell us of, you know, these awesome rides and attractions and movies and all these kind of cool things that that we could see when we got down there. And unfortunately, it didn't work out that we would get down there until, for myself at least, in the case of my honeymoon. But it was just something that was so new, and Disney had yet again reinvented the concept of family entertainment and what a theme park is.
Justin Heyman, where is this on your list? Why is it important?
I have this quite a few rankings lower than the, you know, our listeners. I have it down at number 16. And I think part of that is because it hasn't happened yet, and we don't know. In order, you know, an anniversary in itself clearly is important. And as Steve said, for the third park to make it this far and really kind of go through some trouble spots and, you know, really go from barely a half day park to, you know, pretty much a full day park at this point, clearly is an accomplishment and should be celebrated. But in order for the 20th anniversary to have some significance and make it into the top 10, I think something has to happen on that day, more than just celebrating the milestone. So, you know, whether it be an expansion announcement or attraction announcement, refurbs announcements, something that gave that day some sort of significance. So because it hasn't happened yet, and we don't really know what's going on necessarily, you know, it is kind of, difficult for me to rank it a little higher than some of the other things that we know happened, and we know how their impact on the park was, which is kind of how I ranked this list, was based on overall impact to the park. So definitely, clearly is an important milestone, and, you know, definitely something that, you know, the folks at the Walt Disney Company should be proud of, you know, especially with competition directly affecting this particular park. Mm-hmm. But it made it to number 16 for me.
Scott Smith.
I have this exactly actually at number 8, like the listeners. It's just like Justin said, the reason I think this is important is because this is going to probably come out wrong, but who thought we'd get here, really? You know, like, not like it would close and anything, but the studios has been on such a journey to find out what it is and to cement itself as a full day park experience. And the fact that it's grown so much, and you can really, like, there's a lot of good stuff on the horizon. You know, you can tell with Pixar Place coming and, you know, stuff like that. And the fact that it was, you know, kind of started as a competition, you know, it was started as a response. Like, oh, you know, well, we'll build this in response to that. And now the fact that it's grown into an entity of its own that has so much to offer is just an accomplishment. I think that's just worth noting, you know? Like, this was the park that had nothing... And this was a big accomplishment, especially because it was the first park that had nothing to do with Walt Disney himself. So they had a big job ahead of them. Not only was there, pressure to compete, but, you know, this was the third gate, which then is huge. First park without any input at all from Walt Disney.
Well, wouldn't that be Tokyo Disneyland?
Oh, perhaps.
Yeah.
But that's still Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, that was like, that still had the footprint. Yeah, it was still the clone. This was, well, and like I said, they didn't know what it was going to be. They, like, you know, without Walt to make some final decisions, they didn't know, like, is this going to be a studios that people can watch? You know, is this going to be a theme park with movie-based stuff? So the fact that, you know, it's turned into what it is, which I enjoy the studios very much now, after such a long journey, is something to be commended and something to be celebrated, which is why it ranks so high on my list.
And by the way, the first unique park of the Eisner administration, by the way.
Yes, yes.
Luke Manning, where's it on your list and why?
You just had to mention Eisner, didn't you?
Hey, the guy did a lot of good stuff, but let's move on.
He did.
Alrighty, I have this down at number 12. I think that it's... I mean, we really can't tell that well how significant it is going to be. So this is pretty much just guesswork at the moment. I can tell that it's going to be more significant than the 15th anniversary, which is why I have it higher up on the list. Plus, 20 is a more significant number than 15 anyway. So, yes. And hopefully with this 20th anniversary and the Studio 20 event, and Disney themselves will do something to mark the event like they did with Animal Kingdom and Epcot, and hopefully as well they also announce a new attraction of some sort. That would be very nice.
Alright, I have this anniversary at number 10 because I feel this is the first major anniversary of this park where it's finally found its identity. This park has had such major problems since day one. Again, opened in 1989, really barely a half-day experience, and really meant to be a behind-the-scenes experience, and very quickly evolving into a theme park, but sort of losing its way again as we entered the new millennium. Not really sure where to go, and now here we are. The last few years have been very big for the studios. Toy Story Mania, Lights, Motors, Action, Block Party Bash, the American Idol Experience. The park is beginning to find out what it truly is. And it should, and as Justin has said, it's a celebration of movies, music, and stage. That's what it has become, and I think that's what it should have always been meant to be. I think there was a lot of hands in the mix in the original plans. I think there was plans to compete with Universal. There were plans to follow Walt's original idea of having a backlot tour out in Glendale. Which is where a lot of the inspiration for this park was drawn from. And, of course, the great movie ride idea for Epcot as a pavilion, which eventually inspired this park. So a lot of different ideas came together, and those ideas have evolved and changed over 20 years. And now we have a momentous occasion to celebrate this park finally finding out what it is. And hopefully we will mark that occasion, Disney will mark that occasion, with something special, a nod to how far this park has truly come. And by the way, this park has expanded, I believe, more than any other Disney park in history from what it originally was as far as land and attractions. So, certainly a lot to be said there as well. But again, 20th anniversary coming up in a few weeks, and certainly WDW News Today will be there to cover it all, and we will see what happens. With that, go ahead, Justin.
Oh, sorry, Tom. The one thing I wanted to mention that you mentioned, I'm glad you did, was that this park really did spawn from a attraction, a single, you know, I mean, there was all these other plans, but a singular idea for Epcot. So I think in that, you know, maybe I unfairly ranked it a little low because of how far it has come, but I think that's an important thing that we haven't really gotten too deep into in these discussions up until now, which is also perhaps some of why
the park has had the identity crisis that it has had. Because it did have, like you said, influences from Walt's early ideas of Backlash, where it had the great movie ride and then some other things sprinkled in. So just, you know, another side note there.
All right, looks like we're just about done. Cut! That's a wrap.
This presentation of the 20 biggest moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios history was brought to you by WDW Celebration's Studio 20 commemorative event. Be sure to come and celebrate the 20th anniversary of Disney's Hollywood Studios with fellow Disney fans at the Walt Disney World Resort on May 1st and 2nd, 2009 at Studio 20. For more information on this coming attraction, head on over to WDWCelebrations.com. Don't miss it, or you may regret it.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life.
We'll see you at the movies.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like that is going to do it for episode number 86 of the WDW News Today podcast. As always, I want to thank you for listening. You make this show possible and worth doing every single week. It's now time for the big finish, giving you all the useful reminders you'll need to know in the coming week. First of all, to contact us here at the show with any questions, suggestions, comments, or concerns, which could also be played on the WDWNT mail segment, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail message at 206-666-2982. If you have not done so already, please, please review us on iTunes. It's a great way to let others know there is an enjoyable Disney podcast out there for them. Don't forget to visit the WDWNT community forums at wdwnewstoday.com/forums, F-O-R-U-M-S. That way you can vote for upcoming segments on this show and view the show notes for this and previous episodes. Don't forget you could follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/WDWNT, and that will get you frequent updates from WDWNewsToday.com, inside looks at the WDWNT network, and also some updates of some personal findings of my own. As well, you can make me a friend on Facebook, and that's also another great way to keep up with my Twitter account, because it also posts to Facebook. Also, while on Facebook, be sure to join the WDW News Today and WDWNT Network group, so you can RSVP for upcoming events and be aware of upcoming events from the WDWNT Network. And speaking of upcoming events, we have Fan Meet number 3 coming up, called Celebrate Along with Mickey. That is April 30th, 2009, at the Magic Kingdom, right in front of Cinderella Castle, right on the curb there. And we're going to meet to watch the Celebrate a Dream Come True parade, and also watch Dream Along with Mickey on the Castle Forecourt stage after that. should be a lot of fun. A nice little event the day before the 20th anniversary of Hollywood Studios. I know many of you will be there, and that's why we're putting a meet right there the day before. So for more information on that, all that information is on the Facebook group. Coming up on next week's show, which will be episode number 87, we will have your Walt Disney World Resort news and rumor report. We will once again be playing Where in the World is Tom Corliss for a fabulous prize package. And we will continue our countdown of the 20 biggest moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios history with moment number 7. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I think that is going to wrap it up. And it's now time for the corniest catchphrase in all of podcasting. That's going to do it for this week. See you all next week. See ya real soon.
Thanks for taking part in another episode of the WDW News Today podcast and celebrating news today. Please join us again next week. And remember to celebrate news today and every day throughout the WDWNT network by visiting WDWNT.com. This is Brian Summer saying good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.